When I came to Boston, as many people in this area, I came as a student. And as we are also wont to do in this area, whenever we walk anywhere, especially outside of winter, there's a lot of construction around. So I'm going to start with a story. A few years ago, when I was still a graduate student living in Cambridge by the river, I happened to be walking past a construction site in my daily walks to class. And they had torn down an older building that had been in my neighborhood, and they were in the process of working on building a new one. And as I walked past, it was this activity full of construction workers and cranes and drills and trucks and excavators and like lots of machines that I didn't even know the names of. And so as I walked this fenced off area, they started digging this giant hole in the ground, and it got deeper and wider as I walked by every single day. And then they started putting in beams. And so I started wondering, you know, what kind of building is being built here and when would it go up? So I would be on the lookout for any of that happening. But as the weeks went on, and then as the months went on, once they finished, you know, digging this hole, nothing very much other than that seemed to be happening, even though the workers were there on site every single day working very diligently. And then just as I had come to kind of accept, like, this is just going to be a hole that I walk by every single day, the building actually went up. And to me, to my kind of, you know, unprofessional, amateurish eye, it kind of went up really suddenly. So literally it felt like on Tuesday there was a hole that I was walking by, and then on Wednesday there was this apartment building. So that's the moment that came to mind when Steve invited me to speak about one of any one of Jesus' parables. And it's the one that comes to mind about the one that he tells right after he selected his disciples and has given his first class, so to speak, with the Sermon on the Mount. And you'll find that inside your yellow program. And it takes place in Luke 6 and in Matthew 7. And it's his conclusion, his kind of his final say to this longer lecture that he gives. And it goes something like this. Luke 6, "Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not do what I say? As for everyone who comes to me and hears my words and puts them into practice, I will show you what they are like. They are like a man building a house who dug down deep and laid the foundation on a rock. When flood came, the torrent struck that house but could not shake it because it was well built. But the one who hears my words and does not put them into practice is like a man who built a house on the ground without a foundation. The moment the torrent struck that house, it collapsed and its destruction was complete." And then there's a similar but a different version, slightly different version of the same parable in Matthew 7. I think in the message, the version for you, just because I think that version kind of strikes at least me in kind of a fresh and different way. So here are his words. "These words I speak to you are not incidental additions to your life, homeowner improvements to your standard of living. They're foundational words, words to build a life on. If you work these words into your life, you're like a smart carpenter who built his house on solid rock. Rain poured down, the river flooded, a tornado hit, but nothing moved that house. It was fixed to the rock. But if you just use my words in Bible studies and don't work them into your life, you're like a stupid carpenter who built his house on the sandy beach. When a storm rolled in and the waves came up, it collapsed like a house of cards. When Jesus concluded his address, the crowd burst into applause. They had never heard teaching like this. It was apparent that he was living everything he was saying. Quite a contrast to their religion teachers. This was the best teaching they had ever heard." So this morning, I want to talk about this parable about building houses and faith and lives in such a way that it withstands rain, floods, and tornadoes in a couple of different ways. First, I'm going to share kind of my experience and my reflections about what this parable might mean to me. And then I'm going to invite my friend Jessica Vavrichak to come up and talk about her thoughts. Not only is she an professional architect, but also a member of this community. And then I'll conclude with some other stories, and then if time allows, invite you into a time of reflection, because I think that's also very important with this parable. So one of the first things that I think that I take away from listening to this particular story from Jesus is that we live in turbulent times. Jesus says, when the floods come, when the rain comes, when the river floods, when the storms come, when the tornado hits, not if. Jesus would make a very poor real estate agent, right? Where location, location, location is everything. He's not saying move to somewhere where there's pleasant weather, but rather build a house where there's for sure, there's certain to be floods, storms, and tornadoes. So I started wondering, you know, were there rains and floods in ancient Israel? Isn't it in a desert? So I did a little bit of research, and as recently as December 2016, they had floods in their coastal regions, and I think you're going to see a slide of that with cars buried in water. So it does happen, not an everyday occurrence, but it does happen. And I think in addition to being referring to literal rain, I think Jesus is also talking about metaphorical storms in our lives. And these can happen to us individually or collectively. So as Steve mentioned in his introduction, I work currently as a researcher in education. And for the past 3 years especially, I've been studying and reading and talking and writing and listening to people from all over the world about the turbulent times that we live in and what we might need to teach our young people at this particular moment so that they could be best prepared to live their best lives in such times. And while there might be lots of different opinions about what are the necessary skills that young people need, I think there's been quite a convergence around the kind of world that we are living in right now. And we live in what many experts call a VUCA world, or it's a military term that refers to volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous, and therefore anxiety-provoking. So if you're feeling these things, it's not you, it's the world. Tom Friedman, the New York Times columnist, recently came out with a new book this year called Thank You for Being Late, An Optimist's Guide to Thriving in an Age of Acceleration, where he kind of summarizes some of the major trends that he sees around the world. And he has this really interesting sentence. In 2004, Facebook didn't even exist. Twitter was still a sound, the cloud was still in the sky, 4G was a parking space, apps or applications were what you sent to college, LinkedIn was barely known and most people thought it was a prison, big data was a good name for a rap star, and Skype for most people was just a typo. So all of these technologies blossomed around 2007, so less than 10 years ago, and they've now become ubiquitous parts of our lives, right? In many ways that even I don't want to admit. It's kind of an everyday thing that you look at your phone and on it with all these apps. So it's kind of an indication of how quickly things are changing in our world, and it's not just in technology, but in the environment, the impact of globalization, and I'm sure you've heard glimpses of this in the recent elections and in the aftermath, and it's just too much to talk about at this particular point here, but basically the takeaway is that our world is changing. It's flooding, it's raining, it's storming around us in many ways, and in many ways not that much different from Jesus' time. So what's Jesus talking about in this particular parable? He's talking about building a house that can withstand these kinds of seismic forces of rain pouring down, river flooding, tornado hitting. And it gives advice about how to build houses and ourselves and our faith in ways that are built to last so that very little can shake it. So it's a compelling incentive for us to kind of lean in and like, how do we do that? And he talks in an extended metaphor where our lives are compared to houses and says that if we listen to and do what he says, we might be able to build a kind of faith that are like houses that can withstand all these forces. And in this parable, he compares basically two houses, not what they are like on the top, on the above the ground, on the surface, but actually he focuses his attention more on, let's talk about what's underneath these houses and how what's underneath, the differences in what's underneath leads to very different results for these two houses. So on the one part, you know, it's a house that's built on a solid rock or a bedrock, and then a house that might look, again, exactly the same on the surface, but deep below it, it's built on sand or a sandy beach that collapses like a house of cards. So as I understand it, there are many different types of soil and earth on the ground, and builders who know what they are doing dig until they can find this thing called a bedrock. And it's basically a solid lithified rock that can lie several hundreds of feet below the surface that won't break, it won't shift, and it won't move. And that's the rock on which they can anchor the house. So in general, the taller the building, the more deeply and widely they dig the earth to anchor it. And then the architects pay just as much, if not more, about what they're doing below the surface as much as they do what appears above the surface. And I think that was what was memorable to me as I was doing these daily walks, weekly, monthly, that I spoke about earlier. So the shock of seeing, you know, how quickly the structure went up in comparison to the weeks and months of work that the construction workers had done caught my attention. And I found myself thinking about how long it takes to put up the foundation versus the upper outer shell of the building, the thing that we see. And the amount of time, again, was just disproportionately longer for the foundation than it was for the actual building itself. And it made me reflect about how important it is, how important a role foundation might play in the construction of a house in terms of its ability to withstand these large forces. And it made me also reflect upon a time when I felt like God was doing some deep foundational work in my own life in a way that was akin to building a building. So about 15 years ago in my 20s, I started out my career as a teacher. And by year two, I was a hot mess. I loved my job and I loved my students, but I was also burned out and pretty sad and depressed. And as anyone who's taught has could tell you, teaching is hard work, requiring so much more than what meets the eye as teachers stand in front of their students for 5 or 6 or 7 hours. But it's much more hours of preparation and grading and providing after school extracurricular, social, emotional support for students. And for me, it wasn't just that the work itself was taxing, but I just had this overabundant, strong desire to do my job well and to please everybody, and was driving myself basically to exhaustion to do it in a way that was not healthy and that actually made me physically ill. So as I was praying in the middle of all of this and seeing doctors and reading and reflecting, and I just had this sense like, oh, maybe I should take some time out because something feels deeply wrong here in a way that's not going to be fixed by medicine. So I decided in my third year of teaching to ask my school if I could only work 80% of the time, which meant just reducing my teaching load by one class, so teaching 4 instead of 5 classes, and then, of course, taking a 20% pay cut. My colleagues thought I was crazy, and those who genuinely cared about me thought I was committing career suicide. And for sure, administrators didn't like me because I was creating all of a sudden this additional work for them, you know, making them scramble to find this other teacher who has to now teach this extra class that I didn't want to teach. But I felt like this is time that I really needed to take in order for me to, again, address some of these things that I didn't feel like could be addressed on the surface. So I didn't know it at the time, but as I was following this little tiny voice inside, I was rebuilding myself at a deeper foundational level. In some ways, kind of reacquainting myself with what I valued, who I was, my sense of self, my sense of self-worth, so that it wasn't so much based on my job as a teacher or my achievements, what Steve referred to as more degrees from whatever, but it was even my ability to work a full-time job. So after 15 years, after this event, so much of my memory of how I spent that time, has gone away. But in preparing this talk, I kind of spent a little bit of time like, what do I remember from that time? What was I doing? And the one thing that actually emerged is pretty profoundly, almost stupidly simple, which is that in that extra time that I had, I just got a repeated sense of being profoundly loved by God in a deep, fundamental way. And people would tell me this as I was, as they would pray with me. I would read about it in the books that I was reading, like Philip Yancey's What's So Amazing About Grace or Brandon Manning's Ragamuffin Gospel. Just abundance of feeling of grace and of being, again, deeply loved. The 20% pay cut, I didn't really feel it miraculously, but I felt more centered and more able to take care of myself and more sure of myself. And in the midst of what felt like professional and personal failure, I was rebuilding myself without even knowing it. So instead of a house or a self built on sandy sand, on a beach, on shifting sand, that was focused on building a shiny building, appearing to do well as a teacher, appearing to have a lot of visible success in my career, I was really laying foundations and building roots, the hidden parts of my life, and working on that. The extra time that I had went on to building that part of my life, not so much about the appearances. And again, just this deep sense of being loved by God as my foundation and my worth as a human being. So I can barely remember all the variety of things that I did that year again, but one of the things that I do remember that I want to pass on to you is something that Steve mentioned in his introduction to me, this thing called Transformation Weekend. So at that time, I was not part of this church community. I was living in California, part of another church. But similar to what you do during Transformation Weekend, I was part of a small group with women where through a six-month Bible study, looked at some of the very same things that the Transformation Weekend looks at in 2 days. And it's looking at different issues that might be impacting you in ways that I didn't even know. So if you haven't had a chance to go to Transformation Weekend, I'm just giving a plug right now that it might be something that you might want to think about, if not this particular time around, but the next particular time around. So after that first year of taking that time off, I felt like I should do it another year. So I mean, really put the nail in that professional coffin and did it a second time. And the fruit of that year actually was kind of surprising. Three or four of my colleagues joined me in terms of taking time off, really making the administrators angry. That's not what I had intended. My classes grew, so I was offering teaching an English elective, and it grew to the point where so many students wanted to enroll, they needed to add another person to teach it because I couldn't teach it all myself. So it grew in ways that I didn't even expect and was much more fruitful in ways that I didn't even expect. And when I look back at those 2 years, and I literally call them my foundation rebuilding years, I have a lot of gratitude in what I went through. And I've shared many times with friends that it's felt like simultaneously the most miserable time of my life, but also the most fruitful and helpful. And then as I survived graduate school, and people who've been through graduate school can tell you, it can be pretty stormy. You're holding down 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 part-time jobs. You're doing what feels like digging a giant big hole without anything to show for it. And you're juggling your own ego, other people's egos, and it can feel pretty stormy. But I really felt like I could survive that well because of the foundation that I had in, again, not those things that happen, but the more deep things. So I look at back at my experience, and I felt like Jesus came into my life to restructure and rebuild who I was, including how I thought about myself. And religious scholars say this about him, that he came to fundamentally restructure the way we think about religion and spirituality. Not in terms of following rules and regulations, although those things are really important, but really to address our hearts, our roots, our foundations, and through it, our relationships with ourselves and with each other. And again, he says this in Matthew 7, these words I speak to you are not incidental additions to your life, homeowner improvements that you tack on to your standard of living. These are foundational words, words to build a life on. If you work these words into your life, you're like a smart carpenter who built his house on solid rock. So I think one of the things that I love about Jesus' stories is that my story is just only one way of understanding it, and there are so many other ways to understand his parables, and I think that's where the power lies. So when I read the story, I immediately thought of my friend Jessica, who is an architect, because of this is so much of it is about building houses. So I thought it would be nice to ask her thoughts, and so to invite her up. And as she gets ready to speak, I just want, one of the questions that I had to ask her was, she's the professional, I'm not, as far as, buildings are concerned. And so from your perspective as an architect, is there anything you want to add to what I've been saying about construction and foundation building?
Hi, it's nice to be up here. So I was talking to Connie as she was thinking about preparing this talk, and how much it really resonated with my day-to-day work. And that I just, as I was reading kind of through how she was preparing what she was going to say, I actually, it settled in a lot because as an architect, every day, Monday through Friday, I do a lot of work that isn't super shiny or flashy. It's things that a lot of times even my clients don't know that I'm working on. Like she was saying, having to dig down in the dirt, the foundations, or what's behind the walls, think coordinating between ductwork and pipe work, and things that people will never see. And things that people... and it's funny because if people did see them, that actually would be that we didn't do our job right. So, I was just saying that I really appreciated this talk. I felt really confirmed, actually, and it was interesting to me because upon reflection, I was thinking, maybe my clients don't care so much about all these little details, and if things don't go right, they don't necessarily want to hear the diving in the details, they just want it to get fixed. But it was, upon reflection, it was interesting for me is thinking that God actually cares. And I actually kind of teared up a little when I was reading through her talk, thinking like, wow, like God, like I feel like God is like right there with me. So sometimes I thought that was cool. But so yeah.
Yeah. No, thank you. And then, when we were talking about, I was asking you for technical advice, but then you had something very interesting to share about what you thought about Jesus' parable in your own life and your own faith foundation building. And I think people would really benefit from hearing a little bit more about that, if you wouldn't mind sharing.
Yeah, so we were talking when she was originally thinking of this as a concept, and I read through the both the scripture verses in Luke and Matthew, what it meant to me. And so I was talking about so my own faith experience. So I grew up in a church. I grew up with my parents' faith. And a lot of, so they had not been Christian, and then they became Christian before we were children. And so they had all these stories, and they had a really solid foundation for their faith. And I thought that I did. But when I look back at that time, like in high school, if someone kind of didn't agree with something that I had been taught, I kind of would get like insecure about it. And so then when I went to college, I ended up losing my faith altogether. Because, I think a lot of people kind of have this happen where I felt like I was being told by a lot of people like, oh, well, of course, like, humans create this mythical figure that we call God, and it makes us feel better. And so I was trying to figure out how much did my family and I make up this figure? And part of it was because I didn't actually have my own stories, my own faith stories. So I had been relying on my parents' stories. And so during that time, I basically lost my whole faith background. And it did take me years to build it back. But it was through my own stories, my own times when God like showed up for me when I really needed him to. And then it was also just seeing other people who had really strong faith, having them like kind of practicing their faith, and just really was impressive, and it was kind of contagious. So,
okay, great. And then you have also led Seek, this class that we offer at Reservoir, that kind of helps other people, that helps people rebuild their foundations of faith. And I'm wondering how your story kind of leads into, the value for you in leading that class.
Yeah, so one of the reasons my husband and I love teaching this Seek class is because we both kind of had the same experience where we lost our faith in college. And it took me about 6 years to really build back a foundation that feels a lot stronger now. So if I now, years later, encounter someone who doesn't believe in God or is an atheist, I'm never insecure. Like, I'm always just have so much compassion and love for that person because I totally get it. Like, I've been there, And so that's one of the things we love about that Seek class is that people come from so many different backgrounds. There are so many different tracks along that foundation building process. And we just are there and just loving them through that process. And, it's just kind of, it's because it's something that we didn't actually have because we didn't actually go through a Seek class. So it's just nice to be able to, be part of that process and love people through that. Because it's, like you said, like, you can feel very insecure when you're trying to figure out. And what you were saying about sometimes when you try to build a foundation, you have to dig a hole deeper and deeper and wider and wider, and you don't know, like, when is it when is it going to start going up? So, yeah.
Good. Thank you so much. So one of the things that Jess shared about her and Tim's journey was just that, it was nice to kind of hear from people about their faith journeys, but it was also incredibly powerful and moving for them to see people do things in faith and kind of explain, you know, why I am doing this crazy thing because of this faith that I have. And I think the encouragement from Jesus is in times of turbulence, especially when things feel a little bit shaky, we need deeper roots and deeper foundations. And it's an invitation to rebuild these times of turbulence. And turbulence can come in many different ways, as Jess and I have shared, with the loss of jobs due to these larger economic, historical forces, or the ways in which our health might be damaged, the way that relationships might end, doubt might appear in faith that we've had held on to for a long time. But it's an invitation again to see, you know, is there life as I am being shaken? So I want to finish with another story, and this is my friend Leah's story, not Leah in our church, Leah, but a friend of mine that I've known since I was in college. She's one of my first Bible study teachers, actually. So for 22 years now, we've been friends, and she's a woman of this deep, deep life-giving faith. And one of the hardest things that I think that can happen to anyone, and I'm even hesitant to call it turbulence, is the loss of a child. So again, Leah and her husband Dan, and not our Dan, but another Dan, had a baby boy named Aaron 3.5 years ago. And he was born at 25 and a half weeks and then passed away 9 days later. So it's a storm that neither of them expected. We all grieved with them. You know, all the months of planning for his arrival and all the hopes and dreams of parents and planning for their child just kind of completely washed away way too early. But as Leah mourned, she also felt like she wanted to build something positive in Aaron's memory and his name. So a few months after he passed away, she started a small fund for youth in grades 8 and below called Aaron's Presence. And basically, children can apply for small grants to support any ideas that they have to make their world a better place. And in the first round, Leah worked with 26 children to carry out 12 projects. And her idea was simple. She wanted to help young people think, you know, not after I've accomplished all these things, what will the world give me? But rather, now that I have these skills and ideas, what can I offer and build for the good of the world? So in the last 3 years, she's now worked with 365 children in 165 projects that's benefited 16,000 people and 40 organizations, and has included things like, you know, a fourth grader putting together an Easter egg hunt for preschoolers, sixth graders taking a cooking class and cooking for people living in a homeless shelter, fifth graders volunteering at a farm and donating their produce to local food banks, and fifth graders teaching their own dance classes to first and second graders. And with her son Aaron's life, Leah wanted to make sure that out of the heartache and sadness, there was also something positive and life-affirming and healing that emerged. And I think in a sense, she's also helping young people build strong foundations of empathy and action. And I think that's what Jesus is calling us to do today. There will be storms and floods and tornadoes in our lives of all kinds, but follow Jesus, practice what he asks of us, and we will have lives and faiths to build something so solid. Life will come out of death, and we won't be shaken. Or maybe shaken, but at least have the opportunity to rebuild whatever feels shaky. So Jesus said, people said Jesus taught as one having authority, not as the scribes who had position and power. Jeremy Hall, in his book Silence, Solitude, and Simplicity, says Jesus had an inner authority from a depth and a wholeness within his person. That inner authority, that authenticity, gives weight to one's words in a way that people don't seek or manipulate. It's simply an overflow of who the person is. And I think that's the kind of foundation that he wants to help us to build for ourselves and for our own lives. So I have a few takeaways, and you can find the fill in the blanks inside the yellow program if you want to follow that. So the first one is, storms and turbulences are givens in life. I know I spend still a lot of my energy trying to avoid storms and turbulences. How can I rearrange my life so that I don't get buffeted by wind? But I think he's kind of reminding us we can't. It's kind of part of life. And of course, it's wise to not rush into storms, but maybe use some of that energy to build strong foundations instead, so that when tough things happen, when storms come, you're able to withstand that. So I think that's one of the first encouragements that he has to offer us in this parable. Number two is read Luke 6 and Matthew 7. As I said, this little parable comes at the end of this much longer lecture or talk that he gives, starting with a Sermon on the Mount. And I think it's worth reading, and even worth reading slowly. And I found that these passages to be particularly challenging in these particular times, no matter how many times I've read them, about loving your enemies, about forgiving, about, you know, living well. So I think there's a lot of fruit that can come from just going back to his words and, you know, Jesus, what are you saying to me right now? Number three, do what Jesus tells you to do. So I've had this small, still voice that maybe, you know, it's better to give up 20% of my time and add 20% more time to spending some time with him. Jess leads this class with Seek that helps other people to rebuild their faith. My friend Leah had this, you know, small idea that maybe she should start this program for kids. You know, if you feel like Jesus is telling you to do something, however small, you know, try it out and see what happens would be the third encouragement, because that's what he says. He says, don't just sit there and talk about me in your Bible studies. Go out and do what I ask you to do. So put it into action, and I think it's helpful for building relationships with other people and also building relationship with Jesus. You know, when you step out in faith and he answers, you're so much more grounded in, you know, what is Jesus capable of doing. Number four, focus more on the fundamentals, the deep foundation, than on the showy house above the ground. So Jesus says in his Sermon on the Mount basically this, you know, on the surface, you might have lost it all. You might be hungry or crying. Or alternatively, you might think you have it made. You're satisfied with yourself, that life is fun and games. But there's a deeper reality at work. Pay attention to that deeper reality. See the house? There's a deeper foundation underneath that that holds it together. So focus on the foundations, you know, focusing on watering and planting the tree if you want good fruit, and go after the hidden things, because out of that will grow out the things that are seen in times that are, especially when times are turbulent. So some concrete steps might be checking out Seek if you feel like what Jessica talked about earlier might be something that's compelling for you and you feel like you want to figure out, like, is my faith handed down to me or is it my own? And maybe some other people in community with me might be helpful. Or go to Transformation Weekend if you haven't done that already, either this month or whenever it's offered next. And it doesn't have to be life-changing. Like, and I had a luxury of being able to take some time off from work, but, you know, for maybe it's just 10 minutes for you in the morning or during a week to spend time with God and to pray and to read and to kind of really think about, you know, what are the things that I could be spending my time on. And one of the things that came to me as I was thinking about, you know, foundational work, so I shared earlier that I have a 12-year-old living with me, and I feel like parenting is like such... It's just all foundational work, right? Like, so like I've been telling this kid for like 2 years now, and like morning and night, like brush your teeth. And I'm like, how many more times do I have to tell him to brush his teeth? It's like such boring, hard, just work. But I feel like, I mean, that's foundation building. Like parents are building the foundations on which, you know, our kids will grow up and live their lives. And in some ways, much more important than some of the flasher things that we might be doing with them. So that's how I want to conclude, and then just give you some time to reflect on your own with these three questions listed below on the yellow sheet. So I'm going to give you some time of, I guess, silence to just, you know, just write down whatever pops into your head. So the first question is, you know, what seems to be stormy in my life right now that seems to be shaking my foundations a bit? I'll give you a couple minutes to kind of just jot that down. And then the second question is, what are the foundations of my life, the bedrocks on which I anchor myself in my faith, well-being, and relationships with other people? So I think for a lot of us, foundations might look different. You know, God made us all, you know, diverse and different and beautiful in our own way. So my foundation might look different than your foundation. And so for you, what are some foundational beliefs or practices or relationships that on which you anchor yourself? And, you know, if you don't have them, if that doesn't come readily to mind, you know, what are some ways you could be looking for some foundational practices or values in the next day or week or so? And then the last question, what might Jesus be saying to me about how to have deeper, stronger foundations? And even in preparing for this talk, you know, having my friends reach out to me, and I was also sick this week, so like somebody just, you know, one of my friends just randomly emailed me through Amazon, honey, it's like, feel better. And I'm just like, you know, I feel shaky, but, you know, the strength of my friends are what kind of held me together this week. And so, you know, it might be other people, or it might be some, you know, something more personal to you. But what are some ways to build stronger, deeper foundations? And then every week we have people who love to pray for you if you have any needs. And so I'm going to just read a few of some of the things that they felt like they sensed from God as they were asking about, you know, what could we be praying for this week. So here are something they usually are, I think, towards the back of the room, towards the back. So guilt or shame for what you did or didn't do. If you feel like that phrase resonates with you, please go back for prayer. Number two, if you are suffering from acid reflux, you're encouraged to go back for prayer for healing. If you feel like you lack physical balance, that's another one. Addiction relapse, if you're experiencing that, please go back for prayer. And then if the phrase turn our mourning into joyful dancing resonates with you, they're inviting you to come for prayer or for any other things that you might be having in your heart. So let me close for us by praying for us, and then the worship team will sing. And so God, thank you for this opportunity to be with you in this particular way. And thank you for the ways that you want us to build strong foundations in you, that you want to for us to be strong in the face of turbulence in terms of you know, stormy relationships or stormy life circumstances and losses and times of feeling shaken. Thank you that you know that you take that as a given, and that you're encouraging us to follow you in all of that. So this week I pray that you would keep us close to you and tell us what you would have us do so that our foundations would be stronger than they are even now. Thank you for this. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.